Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I couldn't
everyone, and welcome to another Friday night edition of Let's Talk for Org. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. We're going to say for the record, we do not own the rights to that music. Also, we're going to ask you to click tag share tonight. Tell someone that Let's Talk for Org is on the air, and we're about to cover the topic, is Como being over-policed? But a reminder, early voting is April 19th through the 27th. To vote by mail, you must apply by April 20th. And we all know Election Day is May 1st. Let's all get out and make it a historic election. To the panelists tonight, we're going to ask that you answer your questions or respond to comments in 3 minutes, if at all possible. If you have noise in your background, we're going to ask that you mute yourself when you're not speaking. And also, please don't attempt to listen via the computer and the phone because there is a time delay and it will be confusing. So we're going to ask you to mute your computer and talk with us only through your phone or communicate with us only through your phone. Also, Fort Worth PD Assistant Chief Aldridge was supposed to join us tonight, but he will not be joining us. We got a statement from Chief Noakes, and I'm going to read it verbatimly. He said, after considering this further, we're not comfortable being a part of a political campaign podcast. We do not want to give the perception that we are part of anyone's political campaign. We have had multiple requests to speak in different forms forums, and we've turned down each one that involved the upcoming election. We are just trying to maintain consistency. So that's it. We respect the chief's decision. And we here at Let's Talk Fort Worth reserve the right to come back at a later date after the elections and ask the chief to come on and talk with us. So we're good with that. All right, y'all, let's talk about our panel tonight. We have District 3's candidates on tonight. We have five. We have Adrian Smith, Michael Kakaris, Andy Gallagher, Daniel Fattori, and Michael Crane. We also have with us tonight attorney Leon Reed. He's going to take the first 15 minutes and give us an update about what's going on in Como concerning the 68 cameras that the Fort Worth Police Department wanted to put or wants to put in Como. So we're going to find him on the board first, and after we speak with Attorney Reed, then we're going to open up the phone lines to our panel. So Attorney Reed, I'm going to find you on the board. Good evening. Welcome to Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
We can't.
Great.
Can you
Thank
tell
you
us a little
me.
Bit? Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on? What are the updates concerning the cameras going in Como, and what you think all of that's about? Just give us your overview of everything going on over there.
Great. No problem. Thank you. And good evening to the fellow candidates, or I'm not a candidate, I'm sorry, but the fellow panelists and the candidates for District 3, which is the district in which I live. So I am paying particular attention to the responses as I'm trying to elect the person that's going to be best fitted to take District 3 and the city of Fort Worth into the community. Before I get too deeply into the data, I want everyone listening, in particular the candidates, to understand that Fort Worth will never truly accomplish what it can until we are all treated equally and view each other with the same potential. And it is in that spirit that I go on and give you this information. Back in 1991, roughly about 4 months after the Rodney King incident, a Fort Worth police officer was videotaped beating a handcuffed man. Now, this went all across the country as well, and when they asked him about it in the New York Times, he said, "I did what I was trained to do." Then, some 10 years later, in 2001, the state legislature mandated racial profiling statistics by all municipalities of a certain size, and Fort Worth fell into that category. Every year since 2002 was the first year that the reports came out. Every year, without fail, without exception, people of color have been disproportionately cited, arrested, searched by the Fort Worth police. This is a 20-year pattern. And if you will, I'll give you some of the brief statistics. I don't want anyone to take my word for anything that I'm telling you. If you want to follow along, you can just Google Fort Worth Police Department racial profiling data. They have 2020, 2019, 2018, 2017, and 2016 on their webpage. I have everything going back to 2002. But in 2020 alone, the data shows that African Americans represent 15% of the population with vehicles, that whites represent 60% of the population with vehicles, that Hispanics represent 19% of the population with vehicles. So if all were being equal, those numbers, as far as stops, searches, arrests, and uses of force, should be identical. However, in 2020, according to the report on page 21 and 22, I believe it is, you'll see that although blacks are 14% of the population with vehicles, that's important because all of this data is derived from vehicular stops, we represent twice that in stops. We are 27% of the police stops. Of the searches, this is the total searches of the total amount of the citations, well, not the citations, of the total amount of police stops, 44%, three times our representation. Of arrests, 42%. Uses of force in 2020, 58% of the uses of force. When you look at Hispanics, 19% is what the data says it should be. They represent 35% of the stops, 32% of the searches, 33% of the arrests, some 25% of the uses of force. However, whites, according to the data, should be at the 60th percentile. When it comes to stops, they are at 36%, well below, underrepresented. Searches, 23%. Arrests, 25%. Uses of force, 17%. The data doesn't vary that much in 2019. African Americans, 27%. Again, we should be 14% of the total stops. 38% of the searches, roughly 31% of the arrests. Hispanics, 30% of the stops, 28% of the searches, 31% of the arrests. Whites, 40% underrepresented of the stops, 33% searches, 38% arrests, all underrepresented. And it goes like that every year since the data has been being kept. Now, if that doesn't shock the conscious when it comes to how people of color are treated in the city of Fort Worth, I don't know what it's going to take. But people of color in the city of Fort Worth have long been crying out about how we are treated by Fort Worth police. The city even paid the police reform experts group to go out and conduct an investigation, and the preliminary investigation that was issued in July of last year, July 31st, quite frankly, should have been embarrassing to the city and the department, but it justified and stated exactly what people of color in Fort Worth have been stating for a long time. We're treated differently. We're spoken to differently. The uses of force come quicker. And so with that as the backdrop, that minorities are already and historically have been over-policed in Fort Worth, now we have them wanting to use surveillance cameras in the neighborhoods. Now, again, I'm a criminal defense attorney. I have way more access than the average person. I have access to body cams. I have access to offense reports and other things that the general public does not have available to them. And other members of the Tarrant County Defense Bar have the same access and often see the same issues. We see that these cameras are being used in a lot of situations for traffic violations. So when you roll up to a corner in your community and you don't use your turn signal the last 100 feet, and in some cases it's a legal impossibility because where you turned from isn't 100 feet to the corner, they'll use that as justification. Someone watching a camera at a bunker downtown will call up a police officer a mile or more away and have that individual pull you over. And when you ask, what was I pulled over for? Well, someone on a camera said that you ran the stop sign down there. That creates animosity within the community because human beings only have a pair of eyes. So while you're watching me, while you're watching the left hand, who's watching the right hand? I put in a public information request to the city of Fort Worth last year. This was during the month of June. I asked, where are the locations of the police cameras that are in public cameras that you or I or anyone could walk down the street, look up and say, hey, there's a police camera. I didn't ask for anything hidden, covert, or part of a warrant that was an ongoing active investigation. Just the regular cameras that are in public that you and I can see. The city of Fort Worth refused to give me the information. So what does it speak to when you as a citizen, just saying, tell me where the cameras are? We could publicly source them. Hey, if you see a camera, go to this website, write down where you see it. But why should citizens have to do that for public cameras? Why can't we know what they're doing? Because some of the cameras are pointed in the directions of homes and apartment complexes. As a defense attorney, I've seen how far they can zoom in, both during the night and during the day, and they can zoom into someone's living room. Now, you would hope that an officer wouldn't do that, but police officers are human. They commit crimes, and they do things that they shouldn't do, too. And so the department, based on its history, especially with people of color, hasn't earned its stripes to be given more surveillance opportunities in the communities with people of color. What does it do? It could have long-term damaging effects on voting power. What typically happens, and I'm speaking from experience, I'm telling you what I know, not what I've heard, as an attorney that's also practiced traffic ticket law, that what typically happens when new recruits get let out of school, they get taken to the lower economic neighborhoods. They get write a bunch of tickets. What happens? Those people already can't afford the tickets. They get warrants. So now they start pulling over the people with the warrants, and that gives them the opportunity to search the vehicles. And if they find something, oh, you're going to jail. If they don't find something, hey, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm not going to arrest you today. I'm going to let you go. What is that doing? That's keeping the warrant open for the next time that they pull you over. These are people who already likely have the lower paying jobs, so that when they get pulled over the next time, now you're looking at somebody with a lower paying job whose job may be placed in jeopardy. And so when it comes to surveillance, this is not just a Como issue. This is not just a Fort Worth issue. This is a national issue. There's been data that shows surveillance cameras don't stop crime. I'm a defense attorney. Walmart has a gazillion cameras, but almost every day, if you go to any municipality that deals with Walmart, people are still trying to shoplift from Walmart. The cameras haven't stopped people from trying to shoplift from Walmart, and the data shows that, and when I'm speaking of the data, anything I tell you, I can provide to you. It's not an issue. L.A. looked at it. Data showed that cameras didn't deter the crime. San Francisco, Washington, D.C., the city of Baltimore said it did, but it put a big caveat on it to say, where they said they weren't sure. There's data that shows that it doesn't stop crime, okay? And so what it does, so with particular to Como this time around, as part of Neighborhood Improvement Project, $3.2 million was allocated for the enhancement of Como. Part of that funding wanted to include a total of approximately 65 cameras. Now, there are already three cameras in Como that many of the citizens don't want, and that some of the elders weren't fully aware of how they're being used. But that would have brought the total to 68. And when I pointed out to them, Como is only roughly 130 blocks, that would be basically one camera for every two blocks, the elders had enough wherewithal to say, wait a minute, we don't want that. However, under the auspices of code enforcement, because there's been some illegal dumping and the elders want to stop the illegal dumping, code enforcement stated that they wanted 5 pan-tilt zoom cameras and 8 flock cameras. Flock cameras read license plates. Now, why in the world code would want 8 cameras to read license plates is beyond me. But I told them in the meeting, no, ma'am, no, sir, those cameras will be monitored by the police. At that time, the people in the meeting representing the city said, no, they wouldn't be. Now, I wasn't going to argue with them. One of the members from the neighborhood asked the chief, well, the police representative, look into it. And at the very next meeting, the response was, yes, the police will use those cameras. And so, again, anytime the police, just like any other salesman, want to sell you a product, they're not going to tell you all the downfalls. They're going to show you the Bluetooth, the touchscreen, the air-conditioned seats. They're not going to tell you about the maintenance required for the transmission or that the brakes are bad, you know, or that the engine in particular is not a very good one and is underpowered, all of those things. They're not going to tell you that. They're going to show you the bells and the whistles. I had to let the community know from my experience and as a person who lives currently in Como, not by choice, but by circumstance, or not by circumstance, I'm sorry, but by choice. I live there by choice. I was raised there. I live 14 doors down from the house I grew up in. These cameras are going to add to the ability for the police to further their historic trend of over-policing people of color in Fort Worth. Ladies and gentlemen, panelists, council candidates, this is not my data. This data has the city of Fort Worth's logo on it. And cities across the country are taking deeper looks into how African Americans have been policed. Denver has looked at their system. The courts ordered it. The courts saw African Americans and Hispanics are being policed differently, and because of that, a lot of their cases are being dismissed. Now, that may sound like a good thing, but what they pointed out in the article is that it means they're actually being arrested on a bunch of stuff that they should have never been arrested on. And they are being policed differently. The Colorado Supreme Court has heard arguments about surveillance cameras in general when there is no warrant to be looking at people. The Supreme Court addressed it, and they said, a cop can follow you around in your vehicle all day. He can go where you go, you know. But to be able to have a camera that sits on you 24 hours a day and the government knows what time you leave your house, what time you don't, whether you're doing anything illegal or not, it's not Big Brother's business. And in Tarrant County, we're not a big government county. We're just not. And so, again, I bring this data forth. Panelists know. Again, Fort Worth will never truly reach her potential until all of her citizens are treated equally. I live in Como. Como is not the neighborhood that it is purported to be. And whenever they bring up issues with surveillance cameras, they always try to compare it to other minority neighborhoods. Well, Stop 6 agreed to them. Las Vegas Trail agreed to them. Southside agreed to them. Okay, well, tell me the predominantly white neighborhoods that said, give me a bunch of cameras. And if they want them, give them to them. Let the government watch them. If they think it's going to make them safer, give them all of the cameras. But that is not the society that we want. That is not the Fort Worth that we want. This matter needs to be addressed. When they saw it in 2003, they should have said, what can we do? When they saw it in 2003, 2004, they should have said, what can we do? 2005, saw it again. 2006, saw it again. Well, at some point, the inaction of the city speaks volumes to the people of color in Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. We have to get over that in order to get beyond it and in order to let Fort Worth be the city that she can be. And with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. All right, panel. You all heard Attorney Reed as he told us what's going on in Como. What we're going to do, because we did not get a chance to formally introduce you all to the audience yet, we're going to ask each of the panelists if they would take 3 minutes, introduce themselves to the listening audience. So I'm going to look for you on the phone lines with the phone numbers that you all gave me. Give me 1 second. Good evening, Adrian Smith. How are you?
Hey, I'm here. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening, Michael Crane. How are you?
Good. How are you, Terry? I was muted. Good. How are you?
Fine. How are you? Good evening, Michael Kukaris. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Hope you are, too.
Okay. Good evening, Michael Vittori. How are you?
That's Dana Vittori, ma'am, and I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
Good. The only person I do not see on the phone line, and it may be because you have not already pressed 1, and that's Andy Gallagher. If you are on the phone lines, if you would press 1, that will let me know that you are here, but the number that I have for you is not showing up on the board. Again, if Andy Gallagher is on the phone, he needs to press 1 at this time, and that will allow me to find him on the board. Otherwise, let's get started. Adrian Smith, take the next 3 minutes. Tell us who you are and a little about your platform so that the listening audience will know more about Adrian Smith, the candidate for District 3 City Council 6.
Okay. Adrian Devine Smith. Thank you, Ms. Carey, and thank you to Attorney Reed for all that information you've shared with us thus far. Adrian Devine Smith, one of the candidates seeking to become the next district council representative for District 3. My current platform is hold on. Let me see. I'm a Fort Worth native. I'm a Fort Worth ISD graduate. I'm a veteran of the military. My current platform is currently accountability, transparency, and purpose. And my campaign slogan is "Together We Are Better." I feel like I'm someone who has the heart of a servant. I've been helping people my entire life, so I'm just seeking to take this service to a higher level. I've been helping people rather directly or indirectly, so I understand what it takes to help people, the needs of the people, to listen, to just, you know, put that time in, that effort, to do all I can to meet their needs, you know, just basically giving up myself. And I think that Fort Worth, it's a time for change. You know, we know every seat is up for, you know, possible new leadership. So I feel that new ideas, new perspectives, and just not doing business the way we've been doing it, you know. So with that being said, I feel like it's time. This is in my heart as well. You know, it's not something I'm just doing. I just woke up and decided to do. You know, I'm really passionate about this. But I know it's going to take more than passion. It's going to take me actually getting out here physically, listening and, you know, touching bases with the community, all of District 3, to see what we could do to make District 3 better for everyone. But my focus would be starting from day one is what can I do for the areas that have been going without the longest. That'll be my. I'm sorry from jump, not excluding anyone, but there's a great need for people who are suffering in this district that haven't been heard from. So, and if I could say this, okay. I'm gonna stop on this. That message you shared with us, that statement you shared with us from the beginning regarding the Fort Worth Police, I'll go on the record to say that that's hogwash. That's hogwash because it's amazing that they don't wanna be accountable to us as far as talking to the people, but they openly endorse people. So you can't have it both ways. You know, you can't say, well, we endorse candidates, but we don't want to talk to the community. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Michael Crane.
Yeah, thanks, Carrie. I appreciate it. I was disappointed when you said you don't own the music that we listened to going in because I was actually enjoying it. It's pretty great music as we were listening to. But my name is Michael Crane. I was born here in Fort Worth, Texas, Harris Hospital downtown. You know, grew up on the north side, right on Northwest 27th Street for a little while, moved out to Saginaw for a little bit, and then to the north part of Fort Worth, and graduated from Basel High School. You know, went to Texas A&M. I worked three jobs to put myself through college, and working all the time. I had, you know, the public service part of me has always been into it, whether it was serving in student council, whether it was serving on the student board at A&M, in law school, as the student president of the Student Bar Association. That always had been in my heart. And, you know, I spent 27 years in and out of the sort of bigger public service, working down in the mayor's office when I was in law school, again, putting myself through law school all the way, and you know, worked for different campaigns, et cetera. You know, our governor at one point started running for president, and I jumped on that campaign and worked my way up to Washington, served in the White House, served all over the place, and have always loved that. I'm a real estate broker by trade. That's what actually pays the bills. I've also, for the last 4 years, been running the district office for Councilman Brian Byrd. And when he said, I'm going to run for mayor, I said, I think I'm going to run for the job. And he said, you've been doing it for the last 4 years. You might have been doing it. I'm proud of all the stuff that we've been able to do. I say this. I think District 3 is the most economically diverse district out there. We have, you know, Como and Las Vegas Trail, where we spend a lot of time in different capacities doing lots of different things. And then I've got Montserrat and Mira Vista and, you know, $5+ million homes. And so the differences across the district are just different. And I've sat with the pastors down in Como and got the question of, like, you know, how do you want to attack the district? What do you want to do? And I said, it depends on the part of the district that you're talking about. And we're talking about Como tonight. So happy to talk about Como. I've spent a lot of time down there in Como. You know, one of the things I'm most proud of is getting the money out to get that community center built. I think Dorothy DeBose and Carol Brown will, if you ask them down there, will give me credit. Sitting at a meeting across from the assistant city managers, 2014 bond money in 2017 was still sitting there. And I said, why are we not building this? And we got it done. And unfortunately for the last year, COVID has shut down the activities in there, but they're still running camps. My girls go to the camp there during the summer and then off times and spring break, and they love it. And so I'm proud about that, and I'm proud about all the other stuff. Is there more work to be done? Of course there is. But is there anyone better suited to have the conversations, the tough conversations, and sit with people, listen to them, to know what the problems are and try to address them than me? Absolutely not. I know where things are and how to get things done, and that's what I've been doing in my 25-plus years of working on behalf and doing different things. And so, you know, Leon, thank you for your presentation. I know this is a hard subject for the community, and the NIP grant, NIP, you know, Neighborhood Improvement Program, the $3.19 million as part of that. It was a tough conversation with the Camerons. You know, as you know, that was a decision that the neighborhood put out there, or it was a neighborhood decision, as it has been for the other five communities that come in there. I see the points you're making, and I think the decision was right with the neighborhood to sort of hold off and let's put some more of that money into other programs, sidewalks, streets, the park, other things that people want to see done. So I'm excited about that and excited about this conversation.
Thank you. Michael Gutierrez. Thank you.
Yeah, good evening. My name is Michael Caceres, born in Texas, actually in McAllen, Texas is where I grew up until I joined the United States Marines. And then I went ahead and served there as an active duty Marine a little over 8 years, also a decorated combat veteran. I've spent the last 11 years in public education at the elementary level, middle school level, and the high school level as a teaching specialist, as a teacher, and the last 8 years as a counselor. I also completed the educational leadership program at TCU for my principal license. And that's the substance of who I am. I throw myself 100% into what I'm doing. I want to know all of what's going on. I want to talk with people that have had successes, and I want to talk with people that understand that they've had failures and want to be better. Anybody that tells you that every decision that they've made has been correct, don't trust that person, because that's not true for anybody. And so I think in our leadership, we are looking for somebody that can lead, that is a proven leader, but it's also humble. You know, candidates for District 3 are many, but each has unique qualities, and I can see that. And as I mentioned to you before, Kerry, in previous conversations, you know, my campaign really revolves around three L's. That's listening, learning, and living. You know, I'm going to listen to what's going on. We have people that are passionate about their stances. We heard from a professional man today, an attorney, Mr. Reed, who not only has experience in the field, but also lives in the area, you know, and he's upset. And like Michael Crane said, you know, he's been working down there running the office for a few months or maybe longer. And I'm wondering where the disconnect is. Why haven't those two hooked up before? You know, why don't we have a history of conversation that we can go back to and say, you know, like my first L, I listened, and then my second L, you know, I learned something, and now I'm responsible because I live in this area for making sure that it gets better. And that's really what it comes down to, is accountability and accepting the right type of data, the right type of information as truth, because a lot of times the numbers don't lie. You know, and if we've got certain reports that have been produced, data that we can go back to, and a history of being ignored, then we can say some bad decisions were made. But then we move forward from there. We don't stay where we're at and say, you know, hey, we did what we could, because that's not leadership.
All right. Daniel Fattori.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate you having me on. My name is Daniel Fattori, double T, and I'll get into where that comes from later. I have been listening, and I think, you know, I'm going to take this opportunity to introduce myself and realize that what everybody already knows, what the voters already know, like, who is this guy? You know, I'm not a local. I wasn't born here. I moved around a lot, you know, military background, military family. I haven't been all over the world and haven't learned something. So what I bring to this race, which isn't something I just woke up one day and decided to get into public service to do, I bring an outsider's perspective, because everyone can learn something from everybody. And because the fact that I chose to be here, because this is where I wanted to raise my two children that I have full-time custody of, you know, I work hard to better my community for them. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I was born in Los Angeles, California, from a single hardworking teacher, single parent. Learning education was very important at a young age. Moved to New York, upstate, went to boarding school that I had to earn myself into, you know, getting different perspectives from a variety of different individuals. Went back to California, joined the workforce, you know, out there, you know, just like all our essential workers right now, have been really suffering. Waiting tables, bus and bartending, anything I could do to, you know, put myself through school. Realizing that the military was the best option, I joined the military. I proudly served for 10 years, deployed twice. Was blessed to have two wonderful children who I have full custody of. And now that I've settled in Fort Worth, Texas, you know, I chose a career in law enforcement. What I've been working for almost 9 years, Tarrant County Sheriff's Department. We talk about history and being in the neighborhood and being involved, with the exception of you know, Mr. Lee, the attorney, no one works more with crime than me. You can say that, you know, you read the data, you watch the videos, you hear the interviews. I'm actually working with these individuals every day. I literally see crime every day. And you're absolutely right, Mr. Lee. You're absolutely right. Mr. Crane, Mr. Smith, you know, like, over-policing, seeing how this works out, learning, listening, all of the above, you're absolutely right. A lot of these people don't deserve to be where they're at, but to stop the cycle, we have to do something different. It can't be business as usual. It can't be the guy who already knows everything, talks to everybody, knows where everyone's come in their background, and nothing's changed. It can't be the individual who's born and raised in the neighborhood and sees change being promised and change never being produced. Maybe an outsider's point of view is what we need. So that's why I'm in this race, taking the education that I have with a criminal justice degree, you know, criminal psychology, learning how people think, taking the tools I've learned from my two children, you know, having to restart their lives every other duty station, learning and loving the people around you, making it better. That's where I'm coming from. And that's what I'm about. My three goals in this campaign are, you know, what everyone should already have: transparency, community, and, you know, you back the blue with reform. We all don't live in a bubble. We've seen what's happened, how our world has changed. Or maybe it's always been that way and someone finally shined a light on it. I'm proud of my service in law enforcement, but we do need change. Not promises of change. We need change. So transparency, community, and back in the blue, TCB. I'm taking care of business. I want the people to know where their half-cent tax is going, what exactly those cameras are going to be used for. I want to invest in the community to build up some of these restaurants and these hardworking people who lost their jobs and who didn't get them back. And supporting our law enforcement, absolutely, with education and training, and getting rid of the ones that have no business wearing the uniform. So that's what I'm about. That's my platform. That's what I represent. But I will just say, for all the voters out there, the double T, my last name is Vittori. It's Italian. I've been hearing it mispronounced my whole life. I've heard everything from the playground to the pulpit. So all my coworkers, all my friends, all the people that I respect, they call me double T. It makes it easier. So double T for District 3. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm your host, Carrie Hines. Tonight we're speaking with several of the candidates that are running in the District 3 City Council race. We've got on the phone lines Adrian Smith, Michael Kakaris, Daniel Vittori, Michael Crane. They're on the phone lines tonight. If you have a question or a comment about how they're going to run District 3, if elected, you need to get on the phone lines at area code 516-387-1981, and then press 1. Again, the number is 516-387-1981, and then press 1 once connected. Okay, that's it, y'all. Like someone said earlier, District 3 is a very strange district. Como sits between Ridgely Hills to the west, Westover Hills to the north, and Tanglewood to the east and to the south. And all of those areas are pretty much considered high-dollar areas. That said, can the people of Como count on you all to give them as much attention as you would those high-dollar areas? Can they count on the next person elected to the city council seat for District 3 to understand people that may not have as much money and their concerns and their needs as much as they would people who some may say have influence? I'm going to start with you, Michael Crane.
Sure. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I mean, I'll say that I can only speak from and use my previous actions as what I've done. I've spent a lot of time down there, and I realize that you know, different areas have different problems. And, you know, with Tanglewood and then, you know, Westover Hills is its own municipality. It's not City of Fort Worth. But Tanglewood and the other areas you mentioned, you know, they're worried about the, you know, potholes and street lights and things like that. Como is as well. But I know there's we're talking about job creation and other things that we need to happen down there. So I'm proud of some of the things that we've done, too. We've got, besides this Neighborhood Improvement Program grant, there's another $6 million coming down as part of a Horn Street initiative to the best way to put it is like South Main, to create some areas there for businesses to thrive and prosper. And my goal is to keep those businesses and other things Como generated. You know, I met with the legacy guys down there and having some follow-up conversations with them about how we get them involved in some of the activities down there. And I'm happy to have that conversation with anybody that's down there. I've said this again and again, that I think what's happening in Como, what the history that's there, is something we cannot disturb, cannot touch, and we just need to continue to help in some way, whatever that help is. And I know help might mean different things to different people, but to to make sure that people there are taken care of. I know also after hard conversations, there's a lot of people are upset maybe about gentrification and what happens with that. And I'll tell you, that area, I'm a broker, a real estate broker. I get it. It is prime for gentrification. There are things that we are doing and can put in place to make sure that doesn't happen. You know, as I'm knocking on doors and talking to people about what their priorities are, you know, it's about taxes. And I know that's a big thing, property taxes, for people down there that are maybe nervous about losing their home. I was on a call with someone last week that, you know, her mom lived in the house and she's now somewhere else, but she wants to keep the house. And so introduced her to different programs, and we're trying to figure that piece out of it. But that's what I would continue to do. I would say that's where my heart is. And, yeah, I may live on another part of the West Side, but working daily as I have with the Como NAC and the other representatives there, that's what I would continue to do. I think it's a very special place, and we've got to keep that going.
Michael Kakaris.
Well, yeah, I've been delivering services, meeting needs, and providing crisis intervention for almost a decade. You know, that's what I do as a counselor. If there's a feeling of mistrust, then we're going to have problems. You know, it creates an uneasiness. And when somebody is uneasy in a room or, you know, uneasy in a location, they can easily make other people that are around them feel uneasy. And it starts to spread like a bad smell in a small room. And that's a negative way of going about living. That is not quality of life. And so what we have are people that have needs, and some of these needs are being met by the school system instead of by the city. I'll give you an example. Como Elementary School, where my ex-wife used to be the secretary, has a food pantry there that was, you know, established by the school counselor and an intervention specialist. It's been running for years. They were even on TV, you know. And it's that type of experience that certain people have in our city, in our community, in our own neighborhoods. And when that type of experience is wanted, well, then it only needs to pair with a quality candidate who can deliver it. But if there is a seeking, a need for something else, well, I've said it before and I'll say it again. We've got some quality candidates on the panel and running in our district. Some of them with direct experience, running the city, so to say, as I've heard. So there's great opportunity for everybody to have somebody that they feel good about. But I feel like if we're still hearing the same things and we're still seeing community needs having to be met by a food pantry in an elementary school, well, then something's wrong. There's a disconnect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I agree. I agree. Daniel Pretori.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Could you just repeat the question, because I just want to make sure I stay on topic.
I'll say it this way. The Como community is surrounded by very affluent areas. That said, the needs are different a lot of times from one area to the other. That said, can the people of Como count on you to be as concerned about what they need in Como as the other people in the more affluent areas?
Okay, absolutely. I understand exactly. I just didn't want to take the opportunity to kind of pull it off the point, which is the people at Como. Lower-income neighborhoods, you know, they're constantly going through struggle. I myself have come from that type of environment. And it's really easy when your neighbors to, you know, north, south, east, and west, you know, have clean streets, big malls, you know, more businesses, you know, and you're surfing through potholes, you know, and catching rides on lagging public transportation just to get to work every day. It's very easy to feel that you've been forgotten about, that, you know, you're, by the definition, disenfranchised from the people who are supposed to represent you. You know, they come around once, you know, every election cycle. So absolutely they can count on me. You know, when I said I wanted to move to this side of town, when I wanted to raise my children here, I meant that. And that means, you know, putting in the work. You know, you get nothing from doing what you have been doing. That's the definition of insanity. If we've been doing the same things over and over, and I know all the people, and we can make it happen, but it hasn't happened yet. And, of course, you know, it's easy to get, you know, bogged down with the details, but the number one thing is you got to listen. You got to talk to the people. You have to put yourself out there. You have to understand and make them understand that just because you're not bringing in the millions of dollars across town doesn't mean your life, your family, your needs are any less important. We can talk about growth all day. We can talk about building up Fort Worth to, you know, what she needs to be. But, you know, if we're not taking care of the people who run the city, who literally are the lifeblood, the essential workers, then all of it's just going to collapse in on itself. So taking care of the people of Como, that's not even an option. It's like taking care of your arm or your leg. You can't do the work that needs to be done if you neglect a part of the body, and all of us together make Fort Worth strong.
All right. Adrian Smith.
Yes, ma'am. I will say this. Our needs are not different. Our needs are not different. Our needs, however, are just ignored. You know what I'm saying? Because think about it. Those very areas you spoke of, we raise families just like they do. We have community functions just like they do. We want the best for our families and our loved ones just like they do. We are part of Fort Worth just like they are. So I would say this: it's amazing that this all trickles down from how this country is set up. You know, the ugliness of this country has always trickled down. It's trickled down to every aspect.
Okay, we can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
No, we can't.
Can you hear me now?
We can.
So as far as our needs are concerned, our needs are just ignored. Our needs are no different. Our needs are just ignored. But when it comes time for political, you know, posturing, you know, when it comes time for political time, all of a sudden everybody has these little pet projects they want to present to us to say that, hey, we want to give you this, we want to give you that, just to say they did something. For what? Just so they can get votes, so they can get, quote unquote, you know, brownie points. But it's time out for that, because if we are paying taxes here, they're tax-paying citizens here, trust me, they want to see where are their tax dollars going. I mean, these areas you spoke of, the person that sits in the seat has to advocate for this community just like they advocate for those other communities. There is no excuse. You have to advocate and promote this community just like you promote those other communities. You know, the will of the business interests, it shouldn't be more than the will of the people. And that seems like that's what we're dealing with, you know. The person that occupies the seat is always the one, you know, they're the ones left with the final decision, you know. So, yes, Como, we deserve. The people want it, you know. And not just Como, but every area that has been disenfranchised by the system that is governed by. We want what's ours. And if you can't give it to me, then why am I paying taxes? Stop taking my taxes. Stop taking my tax dollars. If you can't give it to us, stop taking our tax dollars.
I agree. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. And tonight we're speaking with four of the candidates that are running for City Council District 3. We're speaking with Michael Crane, Michael Kakaris, Daniel Fattori, and Adrian Smith tonight. If you have a question or a comment, you can get on the phone lines now by calling 516-387-1981. Then
pressing 1 once connected. Again, that's 516-387-1981, then press 1 once connected. We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to go to 682-351. Good evening. You're on Listening Courtroom. 682-351, good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. One of the questions I have, and I live in Como as well, and I know Leon Reed, and okay. The thing that I have, one of the big concerns, I have an issue with the cameras as well. But mm-hmm. I think another issue I have is the perception of Como. You know, we know we have a higher income and we have some that are on the lower income and we have it, some people that are in between. But we have jewels and gems out here. We have children mm-hmm. who have, you know, fortunately for me, I learned how to hustle the school system because I'm like, okay, the feeder school my son should go to, I went out to the TEA and looked at what was the suspension rate for minorities in that school. I was like, that's not a school for you. So I slept outside for him to go to Pasco High School, and he ended up going to Baylor. The same thing, scholarships or whatever. But the hustle with the city of Fort Worth now, of the school district, is, you know, you have these designated schools for different programs like nursing, communication, whatever, engineering. Then you have other people that will come into the community. Or ask, like one person asked my grandmother, can I pay your water bill? So they could use that for an address in Como to get their kid into Montessori. So you have people that do that all across the city, and what they do is they allow their kids to become the top 10%ers after they've come out of private schools, and they get these state scholarships. And that's one of the hustles that's out here now. And I don't agree with it, but I don't believe there's a way that you can stop that because if it's truly the top 10% of Dunbar in a predominantly black community, it should be more black children that are getting these scholarships, and they're not, because you have people that will do rental properties or move in. Their kids are, you know, can go to that engineering school and get a leg up. And it's one of the things that keep our type of communities from growing with our children. And we have gyms out here. They're extremely smart. They can do whatever they need to do. We're not just like people that are dumb. We're not. But my thing is they need to look at it holistically. Education, how they treat the community, resources. And that's all we ask for, and policing.
Wow. Well, thank you. I see Andy Gallagher has joined us. Good evening, Mr. Gallagher. How are you?
Yes, good evening. Thank you very much for having me. And the lady that's talking about the Como situation, I know that the city of Fort Worth can go on and check all the water department people and actually go through the list and try to disqualify the people that are just moving into the district for a short time, for 6 months or whatever, and to just to get a leg up, as she says, with a different school. The place in Como, they have pretty much been taken over right now by the people at the Habitat for Humanity. They've come up there with 180 lots that the developers are allowed them to put up the houses. So really probably one of the situations would be check all the people that are getting into the houses that are into Habitat for Humanity in Como, and verify the addresses for the kids, and that might help your problem a lot, especially when they're trying just to take advantage of the system.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. We're going back to the phone lines. We're going to go to 817-721. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing? I want to thank the candidates for coming out and giving us information. This is Eddie Griffin. And I was listening to Mr. Crane. He has an interesting history. Looks like he's been around. And I think he said he's been to Washington, D.C. And But when he began to talk about District 3, he mentioned potholes. I mean, gee whiz, priority on Michael Crane's agenda? Do he think that racism is a problem in the Como community being ignored and over-policed? How does he feel about it, the relationship between the police and the Como community? I mean, potholes?
Well, we'll give Mr. Crane
sure.
an opportunity
hey,
to...
Sure. Hey, Carrie, will we take that? Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Griffin, I think there's what the question was is there were two different sort of different neighborhoods, Tanglewood and some other more prosperous neighborhoods, and then Como. And so I was juxtaposing the idea that, yeah, we have problems, and the problems in Tanglewood and in other areas are different than what you have there in Como. I get calls about potholes and streetlights and other things on a daily basis from the folks in Tanglewood and about their property taxes and other things. But no, I fully aware and fully cognizant of all the issues in Como. And let me restate that. I know that there's a lot of issues in Como. I know there's more that we need to address and more that we need to do and more conversations that we need to have, and that's what I'm willing to do. But I know that we have problems here in Fort Worth. And we're talking about the over-policing, and that's why I commented complimented Mr. Reed for bringing up the cameras as it was part of the discussion and other things that are happening there. But I've been part of the conversations, too. We talked about Como Fest is going to happen again this year, and I'm very proud of the legacy guys of wanting to bring this on. But I've sat in those meetings with the police officers about working to keep the community there safe. I think there's sometimes some misnomer about that event especially, but we work with the group there to make sure that it's all run smoothly and that everybody, follows the rules. You know, last year we were getting calls at 3 o'clock in the morning because there were four-wheelers and other things and fireworks being spread out and shut off, and we didn't want the homes to burn down there if they got caught and that sort of thing. But I'm fully aware, fully cognizant, we have issues to work on here in the city, so my comments were not about dismissing any of that. It was more about answering the question that Carrie had asked.
Well, Michael mentioned something about trust and mistrust and promises made and promises broken. You know, can the minority community trust you? This is what I'm saying.
I appreciate the question. I would say this. I can only speak to my heart, and my heart is I want to see all of Fort Worth succeed and strive and do better. And I would say if you looked at all of my background and all that I've done, of course, across my life, yeah, I've spent some time in Washington, D.C. I've spent some time in Austin. I've spent a lot of time here in Fort Worth where I grew up. But across the board, I have championed causes to help people make it better. I said earlier in my statement, if you didn't see that, if you weren't on it, that I put myself through college, I put myself through business school, I put myself through law school. I have had opportunities given to me, and I've taken those opportunities every chance that I have and worked hard to do it. I also know that I've been given opportunities that other people haven't. And so I know that I have a responsibility, and I'm teaching my girls. I've got 3 daughters, 2 that we adopted while we lived in China, and our own biological daughter that's 5. And I'm teaching them every day that they are – not only good people and deserve to be here, but that they have a responsibility to make sure that everybody else around them is taken care of however they can. So they've been down in Como as we've done the food banks on Fridays, every other Friday that Carol Brown sets up in the group there. They've been down there with me at Las Vegas Trail, the food banks there, passing out food and making sure I want them to see how other people live, and it's not all bells and whistles, and not everybody is doing as well as their friends are. And so I think that that's the conversation that we need to keep having is how do we help everybody succeed, and what do we do to make sure that everybody has a chance and sits at the table and has the conversation and those opportunities. And that's what I'm committed to keep doing, Mr. Griffin.
Okay, if elected, could you support a black female as mayor?
If I was elected, and I, if you're referring to Deborah Peoples, if she's elected as mayor, and maybe that's, I mean, that's not where you're going, I would support her because I believe in Fort Worth. I love Fort Worth, and we have to work to make Fort Worth better for everybody. And this might sound to people as a lot of just campaign BS, but it's really not. If you look across everything I've done, anything I've gotten involved with, I want to make it better and leave it better. Will we always agree on the outcome or what the solution is? No, and that's part of a democracy. But everything that I've done is to make it better and make it better for other people. And so that's what I would continue to do.
Thank you, Eddie, for those questions. We're going back to the phone lines, 817-378. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 817-378. Good evening.
Good evening.
You're live.
My name is Brother Malik from Brotherhood Movement. This is directed towards Ms. Crane. July 3rd, I watched Cuomo get totally declared martial law, militarized, because the last 3 years, Brotherhood Movement and the comrades have been in Cuomo to keep the peace. Then I come back to the southwest side of town, and we don't see the type of the over-policing, rolling out military tanks, militarize a whole community that's that small. I'm from Highland Hills, Mr. Crane. And these police cameras ain't nothing but racial profiling. Don't act like you understand us because you ain't us. You never been African-American a day in your life. Your parents ain't never been subjected to Jim Crow. So we not going to sit here and let you play us like that. A handful of people do not control Cuomo. My daddy came to Cuomo in 1965, and he could tell you what it's like. I've been out there the last 3 years on July 3rd. Understand me. Safeguarding the people from the police and themselves. So, Mr. Crane, I have never seen you out there in Cuomo at the hours that we have been out there to keeping the peace in Cuomo so nobody gets murdered, nobody gets shot. If we come to that extremism to where firecracker popping, and I come over here to my side of town, the southwest, it's lit up like a firecracker. I go across the bridge over in Tanglewood. Y'all don't do that to the people in Tanglewood. This is actually an ultimate act of racism and bigotry and hate. That's what the problem is. A handful of people that you talk to, them people that's at NAT, do not make the voice of every person in Cuomo. So, Mr. Crane, you are totally, to me, you are oblique as being a person of Afro-American that knows Cuomo, that's been around Cuomo for the longest time. And we've been out there 3 years in a row, Mr. Crane. I have never seen you out there. After keeping the peace in Cuomo on July 3rd or any other activity that's going on in Cuomo. This has been going on for about 60-plus years, what's been going on in Cuomo. It's the thing about it is bringing the community together as a whole to make the community. I live in Highland Hills. I dare you to put one camera up there and try to police us like that. And that's a bunch of jobs. It's a bunch of bull. Y'all need to be transparent with the people about these cameras, who came up with it, who the people that were sitting at the seat at the time y'all came up to stick these cameras in this small community. And the only thing is, y'all want to squeeze Cuomo out, get the Afro-American people out of there, and bring Cuomo the way y'all see fit. But we not fun. I encourage every citizen of Cuomo to be a community, to stand up. No, you not fun to glaze. Don't glaze us, sir. I feel totally disrespected as an Afro-American citizen in Fort Worth with this type of job that you're trying to lay down to the people. And that's a bunch of jobs, sir. This is racism and bigotry at its finest. Just like Brother Leon Reed told you what you're doing. I got footage of them bringing tanks in this community over some firecracker popping. Me and my group was attacked. Four kids riding a four-wheeler, they had been doing it all day until you bring your bulldogs out there to terrorize. That's what y'all did. And if you the type of person that upholds that type of crap at the police department, you should not be seated in that District 3. And I encourage every person that in Cuomo or in that surrounding area, I was there. I was on the ground. You can't tell me I know what type of stuff they do, and that's just ridiculous to not come back over here with the non-indigenous folks that don't look like me, and they it's blown up. It's blown up. This is what the type of stuff that we're talking about.
Why are you directing that at Mr. Crane? Is there a reason you're not directing that at the entire panel, or why are you directing it at just Mr. Crane?
Because I listen to what he said. Okay. I'm from here. I've been here 51 years. You can't tell me nothing about Fort Worth. I don't like the way he tried to glaze that over like he didn't did this and he didn't did that. What's a goddamn community center after 51 years? I see what's going down. You talk to revolutionary brother, sister. I put my life on the line. My people around me been attacked.
Well, Mr. Crane, let me let you respond. But I was just asking why was it directed directly at Mr. Crane and not just the entire panel. But okay, Mr. Crane, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I understand it. I don't know if there's a question there. I'll say this. I know I have not walked in your shoes. I have not walked in anybody's shoes except mine. And all I can say is I know where my heart is. I know how I want to help. And I know I want to do what it is. So nothing I said was meant to be inflammatory. I didn't promote the cameras, if that's what you're talking about. I had nothing to do with that. That's our Fort Worth Police Department that was talking directly with the neighborhood association there. I understand, too, that the NAC is a group there, but maybe not everybody works with the NAC and sees the NAC the same way the NAC does. I get it. And happy to have this conversation anytime with anybody at any point.
Okay, let me take the next question in. Let me ask this question. You know, seeing along the lines of that, the last couple statements, if elected, what would the panel do, each of you individually, what would you do to bridge the gap between the Como community and the Fort Worth Police Department? Seems like there's some distrust there. What would you all do along the lines of trying to bridge the gap there? We're going to start with Michael Kakaris.
Yeah, you know, I just want to say that I understand the outcry and I feel the passion. You know, Mr. Eddie Griffin, he's a national leader, community activist. He's a change maker, part of history. And the gentleman that just called from the Brotherhood obviously mentioned to you that he's willing to put his life on the line for his brothers right here in his own community. Mm-hmm. And so he's a soldier. And I can hear in his message that he is serious about his service as a soldier in his community. Bridging the gap, that is not just a one product solution that we're going to come up with. You know, I've mentioned before that there's some things that we can do to change the perception of police officers in certain areas where there's trauma that doesn't need to occur. But there needs to be a connection made, you know, and how do you bridge the gap? You know, you have the conversations and you model appropriate behavior. You know, the same thing if, you know, you're trying to make sure that your German Shepherd goes outside to use the restroom. The same thing if you want to make sure, you know, that your son answers politely when he's asked a question. It takes the effort. And as a former youth mental health first aid instructor, I can tell you that I've got experience training bus drivers and, you know, school resource officers, which are police officers within the school system, and helping them to understand mental health crises, mental health diagnoses. You know, a lot of that goes underreported. And more so in our, you know, minority communities. There's a stigma. And one of the things that I've been fighting is that stigma for almost the last decade. And whether it's anxiety or depression, you know, whatever it is that might be going undiagnosed, you know, I think that we can address it. We can provide those resources to people And then we can also expect appropriate modeling by the Fort Worth Police Department, which is, you know, putting their best out there and making sure that their best are involved with training the rookies, you know, training those people that are coming in, delivering messages about, you know, inclusivity, partnering with the Blue Zones here in Fort Worth, which is all about wellness, you know, and living well. And like I said, you know, getting the officers out there and having some exercise together, you know, using some, restorative practices and sitting down and having, you know, small group conversations where we can say, how were you affected? Who else was affected? What did I do? You know, and then what would you have liked to have seen different? And then we can get some of the information that we need to move in a different direction.
Okay. Daniel Vittori.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, you know, it's on the whole, it sounds like, you know, it's a very easy solution, you know, like, you know, listen to the community, work with the community, you know, but it's the same old song and dance. I mean, law enforcement needs to do a better job working to build relationships with community members. One of the only encounters people have with law enforcement is being stopped and interrogated. It does nothing to improve the community safety. You know, I believe, you know, what the caller was referring to, you know, was the 4th of July parade, you know, and how it's like, you know, it's very, you know, militarized, you know, and, you know, there's police officers out there just to keep the peace. But it's been taken as an invasion. There's been articles on that. I've read those. And, again, you know, from an outsider's perspective, if that's newsworthy, then obviously people felt pretty strongly about it. You know, community members need to become, you know, like, you know, afraid of the very people they're in a position to protect them. You know, this whole thing is about relationship building that leads to trust and that leads to improved police-community relations. So, you know, when the gentleman called in, you know, obviously passionate about the situation, you know, you hear it. You hear the anger. You hear, you know, the frustration. And that's what, you know, people of color, myself included, you know, you have when it comes to feel like you're not heard, when you feel like you're disrespected, you feel like, you know, you're not treated the same. And that's what, you know, Attorney Lee, you know, posed to us all at the beginning of this, you know. What can we do to treat everyone equally and fairly to elevate our city to where it needs to be? Like, that's the main focus. And it's going to be tough, you know what I mean? It's going to involve, you know, a lot of, you know, long nights, a lot of back and forth dialogue. It's not going to be something as simple as, you know, training a dog or, you know, like, you know, I have two kids, you know, and no sneaking candy after dinner. You know, these are adults with their own background, their own education, their own viewpoints, thoughts, opinions, and concepts. You're not dealing with a lesser, you're dealing with an equal. And that's one of the things we need to remember. You know, it's not a buzzword. It's not us versus them. We are them. They are us. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Andy Gallagher, same question.
Yes, I believe that if thing to do would be to start with the captain and the sergeants that are over the NPO officers that are in the West Side Division for Como, and then take the situation when after whatever they come up with their perspective as far as if it's over-policing, and maybe it's in some cases it's under-policing. And if he would just take the idea of contacting the, number one, the captain, number two, the sergeants, and number three, the NPO officers, and see what can be done for over-policing or under-policing. And then take it to the situation with the I happen to know that there's one sergeant, Tony Martino. He's been with the force for 28 years. He's very experienced. So any kind of idea that they would need to deal with the West Side, I would start with him. I would start with the captain and easily with the West Side Division. And Como should be number one. I am really supporting Deborah Peoples. I know this is not the right time for this, but the the gentleman talked about the mayor's race. I believe that the city does need change. Some of the people, the councilmen, the mayor, for example, they've all been in the status quo. You're not going to get change coming from the city unless we get new people. And I believe term limits would be great. Now, I'm 65, so I don't expect to be the city councilman for 10 years. I think 2 years would be great, and I think that we should have term limits, the mayor and the city council. Of course, the people that's in the job, the people that's doing the job, they probably would disagree with what I have to say. But, however, it's just my own feelings. Thank you.
All right. All right. Adrian Smith.
Yes, I would go right back to where I began, and that's with accountability. And again, the accountability that I speak of is regarding, okay, we pay our taxes, right? We have taxpaying citizens here in Como, right? So we pay our taxes for you to police us, not to over-police us or to under-police us, but to police us. So how do we bridge the gap? We bridge the gap by, like, what the gentleman, the brother spoke of when he called in regarding one thing, take your emphasis off of the 4th of July celebration. The 3rd and 4th is ours. That belongs to Como. There's no reason that it should be over-policed or militarized or whatever they did on last year. It shouldn't be no reason for that. I actually watched them set up. It's a little spot over here that they set up at. I actually saw them in preparation while it was daylight. But to bridge the gap, I also would say that how can we encourage our young, because I don't see the advocation for our young people wanting to be police officers. So how can we bridge the gap to where we can encourage our youth to, you know, want to be police officers? How can we close that divide? Because it's a divide there. It's this ideal and perception that we have an issue with the police, that we don't like the police, blase, blase, whatever. That's not true. That's just how society presents it. But to begin bridging the gap, it will begin with accountability for the decisions that's made by those officers who are sworn to protect and serve the community. They have to be held accountable for the decisions they make while out on beat. And I would say one more thing. Every call, because I know calls are treated by priority, I say treat every call as a priority. I don't care what the magnitude of the call is, treat it as a priority. Let the community know that you are concerned about if it's gun violence, you want to show up. They show up with the whole force if it's gun violence. Well, the same way you treat gun violence, treat somebody breaking into someone's home. Treat it with the same urgency. You know what I'm saying? So bridging the gap, it would take us listening to the community, because it starts with the community, finding out what's been going wrong and directing it and holding them accountable. Accountability.
All right, Mr. Crane.
Hey, Carrie, can you repeat whatever the question was? I'm lost at this point.
Sorry. Basically, if elected, what would you do to bridge the gap between the Fort Worth Police Department and the Como community? It seems to be a lot of mistrust there. So what would you do to bridge the gap?
Yeah, thanks. I'll say this. There's a lot of things happening in there, and I get there's distrust across the city, right, with the police. I mean, there's just distrust across the country with police officers and the communities. I'll say this. I've worked day in and day out with our police officers, our NPO, you know, Officer Halsey that's down there in Como, a great guy, Officer Gray that was there before, and I know those guys would be good guys. Are there bad eggs in every single – yes, there are, and it's in every job, any place. And do we have to do we need to do what we need to do to get weed out those bad eggs? Yeah, we do. I have full faith in Chief Noakes. He's been on the job for 3 or 4 months, but he comes up the ranks. He understands Fort Worth. He knows the system, but he's also dedicated to make the system better.
Everybody
he's already
comes
making
up the
some heart. There. I'm sorry, Daniel. Did you have a comment?
Somebody interfered.
No, I apologize.
Yeah, okay.
No, that's everybody okay. comes up the ranks. I apologize to military.
What I mean by that is, as you may or may not know, we had six candidates, and we had some from across the country, et cetera. And he came up the ranks and is heading Fort Worth now. But he's been making some hard choices. Do we have more issues to address? Yes, we do. And to make it fair, make it equitable. I've said this many a times. We have got to work, and I've already charged Captain or Chief Noakes with this. We've got to recruit a diverse police officer force. That from the communities, go out and talk to them so it helps build that trust from that piece, that they know the communities, they're part of Fort Worth, they're out there, because there are some good guys. And I think we need to continue having these conversations and opening up and understanding. I'll use a quote earlier from Mr. Reed, we've got to get over it to get beyond it and to be the best city that we can be. And that's what we have to continue to do. But are we perfect? No. But I believe in Fort Worth. I love Fort Worth. And I know we can continue to push ourselves forward. And, again, I haven't walked in anybody's shoes except mine. But all I can do is commit to have these conversations with people and continue to make things better, to make it better for everybody here.
I understand. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host, and tonight we're speaking with five of the candidates that are running in the District 3 City Council race. We're talking to, Adrian Smith, Michael Crane, Michael Kakaris, Daniel Fattori, and Andy Gallagher. If you have a question or a comment tonight, get on the phone lines at 516-387-1981. Again, the phone number to call is 516-387-1981. And then press 1 once connected. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 314-381. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Carrie, how are you?
Yes.
Fine,
how are you?
My question is this. I constantly watch the fingers being pointed at the police. When would the emphasis be on people? From the child in the house, the student at school, and the adult in the street. They don't have respect for authority. Don't comply. When you watch video of these encounters, most of it is just simply comply. Have respect for authority. You say you have a difficult time getting police officers. Where do you think the schools are going to? No one wants to teach them. So there should be just as much emphasis on the people as they encounter and interact with authority that we don't see. And that will solve probably 80-85% of the incidents. I'll listen for the answers.
Okay. Does any of the panel want to address that statement?
I'll be the first to speak on that, if I may.
Okay.
And this is Adrian Devine Smith. I would say this, and I stated in my last statement that we don't have an issue with the police. The black community does not have an issue with the police. Mm-hmm. That's the perception that's put out in society to make it as if we have an issue. The black community as a whole don't have an issue with police. I'm speaking for myself. Is say more accountability for their decision making. And yes, we do believe in accountability for what's going on in our own communities. You know what I'm saying? We know what's going on in our communities. And trust me, those issues are addressed. But let's not make it like it's a us against them type of deal. And speaking of regarding the ranks of how Fort Worth treats their police officers. Look how they did former police chief Joel Fisher. Where is he at? He was the first, if I'm not mistaken, first black police chief there was in Fort Worth. And look how they did him. They blackballed him. And if it's my understanding correctly, and I stand to be correct, I don't believe he had a contract. But you know what? They have a lawsuit on their hand because of how they did him. So don't, as far as how we are, sir. With all due respect, sir, we do believe in accountability for our own, sir. We do. We don't have an issue with the police. is just their tactics and how they do things. They need to be held accountable. Body cameras, when you have body cameras on and they show one thing and it's right on point saying that this officer did this and it's point blank period, then you have a grand jury that comes down and says they didn't see nothing, that's a problem. So.
All right. Anybody else want to address the caller?
Yes, ma'am.
The caller's. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Hi, sir. It's Dan Vittori. So I understand completely what you mean. Whatever you know, my grandmother used to say, you know, when you point your finger at one person, you're pointing four back at yourself. So it's really easy as a member of law enforcement to understand exactly what you're talking about, that it's always it's on me, that I'm over-policing, I'm harassing, I'm conducting myself in an obvious biased manner. It takes all the emphasis off the person, off the crime, off the infraction. So how do you handle that? Well, just like most things in life, you know, it does start at home. When you talk about community policing, that doesn't just mean police the police. That's also investing in, you know, community outreach, making sure our teachers, our schools have the school supplies, the funds they need to make sure that they're educating, you know, our children the way they should be. People aren't falling through the cracks, no one left behind, because we all realize that didn't work. When you're dealing with interactions, you said specifically, you know, like body cameras, you see, like, you know, like if the guy, like, look at how he talks to the cop. Well, I understand. But for there, we can always just go back and just say, what did we both do to get in this situation? The police officer is going to do his job. That's exactly what they're trained to do. You know, they put on that uniform every day not knowing if they're going to go back home at night. And for the 99% of all of the great cops out there, for all the great deputies, the great officers, you know, there are some bad eggs out there. But for the ones doing the job, they're going to go through all the steps. They're going to go through policy. And how do we get to policy? With more community policing, having more citizens see at a traffic stop, we do this because of this. When I'm saying, hey, can you step out of the car? I'm de-escalating the situation because I won't have to worry about you reaching for anything if we can just talk. Of course, you can pull up to this well-lit gas station and then get out so you can feel safe and comfortable. I'm the one that's trained to do these things. The person getting pulled over, they have no control of the situation. So it is on both people. We're all humans. We all have fears. We all have wants, needs. It's a back-and-forth issue. So trust me. I don't say I did back the blue. I am the blue. But I also understand that we can do better. We can always improve ourselves. Just like I teach my children, my daughter, my son, yes, ma'am, no, no, sir. It does start at home, but it's a full circle. And we've got to that place because of your generation, my mom, teaching me, this is how I interact with police. This is how I conduct myself in business and in school. And then I pass those lessons down to my children. It's got to be full circle if we're going to make it work.
All right, we're going back to the phone lines, 817-363. Good evening, you're in Let's Talk Fort Worth. 817-363. Last call, 817-363, you're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Okay, for whatever reason, 817 does not know that we're coming to them. We'll try back later. I'm not sure if 862-351 is wanting to speak again. Good evening, 862-351. Are you pressing to speak again?
Yes, okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. A couple of things that some of the candidates have said. You know, it's all about the respect in the home and how you raise your children and how you interact with police. My biggest fear for me as a parent of one child, a son that lives in Como, who is 6'7", over 300 pounds, we consciously made sure we picked a car for him that he could fit in, but that wasn't, how would I say it, a hood car, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so when you say, when you encounter them, encounter the police department, well, when they, you know, he's like, hey, I'm getting a CHL. I'm like, oh, I don't know if you should get one. He's like, well, I think I need one. I was like, when you run their place, they probably know you have one and they see you in the car, you're huge, just like the whole thing we're going with Chauvin, the whole case, a big black man. Do you see him as fearful? And that's the issue that I have every night when he leaves out and he goes to the grocery store and then he goes around and he checks my mom's house after my dad dies to make sure the house is lit up well. He goes by his other granny's house, his great-granny that's 94, to make sure everything is good. But if he engages with a bad cop that don't know him and the perception is everyone in the community is all bad, what should he do? Should he be like, oh, yes, sir, no, sir, and be polite? Some days I'm not polite every day. You stop me, I may be angry, but do you take me being angry directed at you and then your attitude changes towards me or him or, you know, whatever? And that's the issue that I have. Every night, if it takes too long for him to come back to the house, I'm like, where you at? I'm still at the store. I'm like, okay, you know, and that's my issue. And I understand that other parents probably have the same thing. Not all kids are bad out here. The perception that we live in a hood that make us all hood. We're not all hood.
I understand that. And would anybody like to address the caller and what her concerns are?
I'll take that again, ma'am, if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right. Ma'am, what's your name? I'm Daniel Vittori, double T, ma'am. How are you?
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Pam Smith.
I'm sorry, I couldn't catch that.
My name is Pam Smith.
Ms. Smith, when I say, you know, I understand where you're coming from, I literally mean that. My mother was a single black mother, raising a single black son in Los Angeles as a school teacher. You know, I was taught at early age interactions with police officers, what I'm supposed to do, what I'm not supposed to do. And that's a hard lesson for a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old boy to learn. I totally get that. Having two children myself, I'm going to have that conversation with my son when he's old enough. I've already had the conversation with my daughter, how she conducts herself, making sure she's safe. So I understand exactly what you're talking about. And you're right. No one is ever perfect. No one's nice all the time. No one's polite. He doesn't have to be. He's a human being with coming home from a bad day, got a flat tire. Cowboys didn't win. Stars lost. I got it. So I understand what you're saying. It's like, why is the onus on him? Why does he have to do everything perfect? Why does he have to be polite to run the risk that he might make a police officer in fear? And then your son doesn't come home to you. That goes back to what we're talking about with community policing, understanding that that's your concern, that's your fear. How do we address it? Well, by supporting the police officers, by using the HAPS syntax that we already have, by making sure their budget stays where it is, increasing in education, we learn de-escalation techniques, things to help us realize that, you know what, that person might just be as scared as I am. Just because he's physically dominant doesn't mean that I need to be in an aggressive posture. Learning those steps, learning how to talk to people, how to de-escalate, those are things that Fort Worth does, those things that Tarrant County does. We are educated on that because we take that stuff very seriously.
All right. We're going to go back to Attorney Leon Reed. Good evening.
Thank you. I want to first go on record as stating that, one, I am not anti-police, and nor are the vast majority of the citizens and residents of Como and greater Fort Worth. You will see that I've continuously said I support good cops, bad cops, beware, because every person does not want or deserve to have that badge. I've spoken with your police chiefs. I'm involved with police chiefs. I speak with them routinely and get information and so forth on how to address particular concerns. But respect is a two-way street. You have to give it to get it. And we're not talking about feelings. We're talking about historical data and facts with a City of Fort Worth logo on it, that over the course of the past 20 years, even just limiting it to the reports that the City of Fort Worth has received, then people of color have a right to be irritated with how they've been treated by the Fort Worth Police Department. It's in the data. So it's not a matter of being when you're being racially profiled in the first place. And I hope that point gets home. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect. Being a police officer is a difficult job. It is an honorable job. But that job is not for everyone. And, yes, you can have behavior and exhibit behavior that removes you from that honorable position. But too often, despite what the allegation is or the conduct is by some police officers, the police chiefs have a hard time getting rid of them. Police chiefs told me this phrase, zombie cops. Leon, we can't get rid of them. We have cops that we don't want wearing the badge, that we don't think should have the badge, that aren't honorable, that test a lie in court, that file bogus police reports, that cut their body cameras off when they're not supposed to against general orders. And when we try to fire them, the unions and the arbitrators end up giving them the jobs back. And now I have an officer smiling at me in my uniform representing me that I didn't want there. So there are a lot of opportunities to address policing, to address the training, because every citizen, not just Fort Worth, but every citizen deserves the best screened, the best trained, the best officer in the best mental health state of mind, and the officer with the least racist underpinnings in his or her heart and soul from the get-go policing the streets of these United States and the city of Fort Worth. But Fort Worth leadership and Fort Worth as a whole must address what's been sitting in front of them for decades. Because until Fort Worth says we are all equal, and yes, we've been doing it wrong a long time, Fort Worth does not have the favor stored up in people of color's neighborhoods to just go in and say we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to put more cameras to spy on you when we already over-police you. And so it's not a matter of submitting. It's not a matter of simply complying, because in a lot of situations that does occur, and you have police officers are the ones who escalate. And so, yes, anyone, and I tell this to kids in any forums that I go speak at, your primary goal is get home alive. Don't go on the street talking about you know your rights. There are 9 Supreme Court justices, and they debate and differ on what your rights are. Your goal is to get home alive, and we address that officer's conduct from the safety of a secure environment with a pen and a keyboard, because that data, that letter, isn't going to go away, and it's going to put the city on notice. Why do I have 57 complaints on this officer? Now that when that officer goes and steps way beyond the pale, the city is now liable and responsible because you've been put on notice about this officer's conduct. But I could go on with that, but I do want to articulate Fort Worth is growing. And the more Fort Worth grows, we are going to need, by default, more police officers. Those police officers are going to need increased funding. However, the rub is going to be where the funding is spent. And right now, instead of spending more training on de-escalation, conflict resolution, it's all in boy toys. I did a public information request. Hey, how many hours do you spend on conflict resolution, de-escalation, versus how many do you spend on weapons training and tactics? 8 hours, conflict resolution, de-escalation, around 116 to 120 hours, weapons training and tactics. I could go on, but understand this is beyond being polite. Being polite has nothing to do with you being racially profiled from the jump. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to ask one question of you, attorney, before you leave. I've never really been in Como except to get some soul food from over there. I'm going to be very honest. And I live here in Fort Worth. But I have heard a name repeatedly, and that's Viola Pitts. And her being referred to as the mayor of Como. That said, would she roll over in her grave seeing some of the things that are going on in Como right now in terms of Como being divided up, the gentrification, the cameras, the over-policing, the over-surveillance, how would she be fighting for Como?
You know, I'm really glad you asked that question and brought that up, and I hope some of the younger people in Como are listening right now or get the opportunity to hear what I'm about to say. And particularly, I hope the candidates pay attention as well. Not only did Ms. Pitts, but Ms. Philpott are two pioneers in the Como community. Ms. Philpott came before Ms. Pitts, but the power of a Ms. Pitts and the power of a Ms. Philpott came from their ability to deliver votes. It was their ability to deliver votes that made them respected, and it made people have to come see Como. And when you came to see Como, and there was a reason for Ms. Pitts or Ms. Philpott to get behind you, there was always a benefit that Como received, i.e., one of the strongest and still remaining NACs in the city of Fort Worth, political influence that we still maintain today. However, we will lose that influence the more people continue not to vote. Every community in this city, your power and your ability to cast that vote, one man, one vote, whether you're a billionaire or flat broke, you get one vote. Whether you're the landlord or the tenant, you get one vote. Whether you have a GED or a PhD, you get one vote. Your vote is your equalizer. That's why so many people are fighting to inhibit your ability to vote in the first place. The Klan was founded to disenfranchise people from voting because when the South lost the war, the North said that the Southerners couldn't vote. That's why some of the first people elected to Congress are from Southern states like South Carolina, Virginia, North Carolina, because African Americans voted. But when Reconstruction took place and they allowed the white Southerners to vote again, the first thing they had to do was scare the black people away from voting, and they started inhibiting the vote. So, yes, Mrs. Philpott and Mrs. Pitts and all of the past leaders of Como and today's elders in Como, who we do not disrespect nor disregard their sentiments, I understand why they're upset. They've lived in Como and paid 30 years worth of mortgage and some on a home improvement. So they don't want to go to sleep with gunshots and knuckleheadedness going on in the neighborhood where they went to high school. I get that. But it's my job to inform them of the consequences of some of their decisions on the next generation. So absolutely, Ms. Pitts, Ms. Philpott, and Como elders who've gone before us would be turning over in their grave at what is happening in Como with respect to the amount of policing that's taking place there and with the amount of the lack of voting that's taking place by the next generation.
Thank you for addressing that. Okay, listen, panel, we're down to our last 10 minutes in the show. What I'm going to do is give you all a final comment before we get out of here tonight. You got Como on the line tonight. Tell them why they should elect you as the next city council person in District 3. We're going to start with Daniel Fattori.
Thank you very much, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to the voters. I understand that I'm not from Fort Worth. I'm asking voters who don't know me, who don't know anything about me, to place their faith, trust, and confidence in me based on this conversation, based on what they can look up, based on the promises that I can deliver. Well, that's where we're at right now. We're at a turning point. The entire country's gone through another, you know, civil rights revolution when it comes down to how minorities are treated, when it comes down to how we are racially profiled, when it comes down to us being killed at the hands of, you know, our protectors, our guardians. It's a very volatile time.
And I'm asking all of you to put your faith in someone who you don't know. And that's got to be rough. It's going to be really tough. But like I said at the top of the hour, you know, I'm all about TCB. I'm about taking care of business. Between 10 years in the military, 9 years in Tarrant County Sheriff's Department, working literally with people in the community every day, I am a true civil servant. I'm not going to be rich during this job. I'm not going to take care of my two children by myself and then retire to Eagle Rock Lake. I'm not going to do that. I'm doing this because I want to make a difference. I've seen what good policing looks like. I've seen what bad policing looks like. I've seen communities grow and change and build from the ground up, and I've seen them fade away. I'm bringing new blood, new ideas, and a new passion to this job. We can't do it with the way we've always done it. I did my research. I took my time. I took my tax, but I'm here to learn. I'm here to listen. I need you to help me make this place that we want to raise our children, like I'm doing right now. I chose to move here because of my job, because of the opportunities for my children, because, you know, I want a little bit of that American pie. So I'm asking for your vote. I'm asking for your opportunity. I'm asking for some faith, because faith is what's going to carry us through, not business as usual, not knowing what the problem is, reframing the problem, and then pushing the problem down the road. It's going to take some good hard work. It's going to take a lot of faith. It's going to take someone who really has your best interest at heart, and that's who I am. So thank you very much for having me on tonight. You know, my name is Daniel Double T Fattori for District 3, and I'd appreciate your vote. Thank you very much, ma'am.
All right, Andy Gallagher.
Yes, I can address to the people that I've been here in Fort Worth for 37 years. Our main priority that I would like to see in Fort Worth is get rid of some of these property taxes. They're just outrageous. Number two, take away the streets and the water repairs that we've had, and let's rebuild some of the streets that are pretty much horrible that you would get in each one of the neighborhoods. We can't get we really can't put all our money into the so-called rich neighborhoods, and let's help the underprivileged and the lower abilities for the streets that they just definitely need work. And number three, let's get a balanced budget. Let's be able to take 10% of our money and put it aside for our future. Let's not get the amount of taxes that they just spending and spending and spending, go out with another bond issue and make a balanced budget. And I'd like to say that Mr. Reeves, is it possible to get his phone number? Because he's a very good speaker, and he can definitely give myself and the other candidates some kind of a idea as far as what's happening with Como. If it's something that we need to address, I'm sure each one of us can get out there and we can promote Como and we can get the situation somehow resolved for him. Thank you.
Attorney Reed, would you like to tell him how he can reach you?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Attorney Reed, would you like to tell him how he can reach you?
Oh, I have no problem doing that. My email address is Leon, L-E-O-N, at lawyerleon.com, Leon at lawyerleon.com, and my office number is real simple. I'll tell it to you like I tell it to clients. It's 817-737-LEON. That's two numbers and a name. 73, if you forget the third number, go back to the 7. 737-LEON.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Adrian Smith.
Okay, I get right to it. Adrian Devine Smith, again, like I stated at the beginning, heart of a servant. I'm already serving in my own personal life, you know, in an individual capacity, but I would like to serve in your lives. So, hey, Adrian Devine Smith, consider me. Together we are better. And regardless of May 1st, how May 1st goes, what direction it goes in, I'm here to stay. I'm not going anywhere. I'm dedicated to this process. I'm dedicated to learning, getting better, and you know, just moving this process forward. I feel like, again, this is an opportunity for us to bring about new perspective, you know, for leadership in every district. And if I don't meet your expectations, then by all means, 2 years down the line, you can vote me out. But right now, I'm hoping to be the one. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Crane.
Yeah, thanks, Carrie, and thanks for putting this together. I really do appreciate it. I think this is a good part of the process of having these conversations, having these tough conversations, and just getting the issues out there. I'll say this. I love Fort Worth. Born and raised here, we moved away for a period of time, but that gives you a perspective of where you are. We lived in China for 8 years where we adopted our daughters, who are awesome, and we're teaching them every day to how to be good citizens and how to be good Fort Worthians. And I love our city. I know our city is not perfect, but I believe in our city, and I believe that our city needs to get better. And you know, I'm passionate about the future of our city and where that goes. I know there are a lot of people hurting right now, whether that's from long-term sort of decisions the city has made, whether that's from COVID in short-term, last year, job loss, et cetera. And we have a lot of challenges facing our city in the future. We've got tax loss from sales tax, hotel occupancy tax that we will realize this next year, commercial tax loss, what that looks like, that we'll have to figure out what to do and how we address that for our citizens to keep providing those essential services that everybody needs. And so all I can say is I've always, whatever I've done wholeheartedly, passionately, looked for creative solutions, brought the people to the table to solve it. I don't have all the answers, I'll tell you that. I'm not the smartest person in the room, and I'll never say I am. But I'll say that I'm smart to know who is smarter than me and who we can get to the table, who we can have those conversations with, and how we can work to make everybody's lives better. And that's what I'll continue to do and what I've done already for the last 4 years in the office. And if you talk to anybody, there's not a phone call we haven't gotten that hasn't been returned. There's not an email that hasn't been sent that has not been returned. Again, it may not be the answer that someone wants, but we've tried to figure out a solution to help people across the board, and that's what I would continue to do from there. Leon, thanks for what you brought to the table. I want to sit down and talk with you across the board. I've had some great conversations there, and I, again, will say this. Como is a special place in Fort Worth that we have to continue to figure out how to help, how to make prosperous across the board. There are some good folk down there, and I want to make sure that we do whatever we can to help make them prosperous, also feel a part of the city and feel that they're heard, and I'll continue to do that down at City Hall and represent the people. And so if anybody wants to reach me, you can reach out to me. I'll give you that. My email address is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at Michael D. Crane, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-D, initial D for David Crane, C-R-A-I-N.com, or give me a call, 817-677-8258. I'm happy to have a conversation anytime.
Michael Kukiris.
Yeah, thank you for everyone that listened, everyone that showed up. Another great show. You know, I've been on here a number of times, and I've said from the beginning that my campaign revolved around 3L. That's listening to the community and to its leaders. It's learning from what works and what doesn't, and then living in the neighborhoods, living in the businesses, living amongst the people like I do now, and making sure I'm inserted in what's happening. And I already hear other candidates mentioning, you know, listening and learning and living, and that's influence, and that's leadership. Before I get off, I just want to say that Michael Crane kind of took some heat today, but we got to remember that he's got experience in city government. Like he said, he worked his way through college, you know, wasn't handed to him. He's become successful, now wants to serve in full capacity, and previously, you know, didn't have the full position of councilman, so if he was elected, he would have the resources and influence to make good things happen. So like I said, there's good people on this panel. You have options.
So, you know, good luck to everybody in the race, and God bless.
Wow. That's the final comment tonight. Wow, what an awesome show. I'd like to thank my guests tonight, Michael Crane, Michael Kakarius, Daniel Fattori, Andy Gallagher, and Adrian Smith, along with Attorney Reed. Thank you all for being my guest tonight. If you like what we do here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, feel free to contact me. We'd love to have you advertise with us. Also, y'all, listen, we all got to go vote May 1st. This could possibly be the most important election that we've ever seen in our city. Definitely get out and vote. If the show has aided in anybody going to the poll and voting for the first time, we will feel that what we've been doing for the last couple of weeks was worth it. Listen, y'all, we got to get out of here, but that's it. Next Friday, same time, same bat channel. Good night.
Thank y'all.
Thank you very much.